Welcome to the Geek Embassy Watches Runaways. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here tonight with Dante, Evan, and Isabella. Say hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
I was hoping that all three of you would say it at exactly the same time.
You got a bunch of nerds on camera. What do you think that at least one of us is going to do?
Yes, gotta go for the obvious jokes. Yeah. All right, so we're here to talk about episodes 5 and 6 of Marvel's Runaways, the new original content on Hulu. Our last episode, we covered 4 episodes, the first 4. And so we have a little bit more focus this time. So we have just two episodes to cover, the most recent ones.
Thank goodness, because that was intense last time. Thank you
really
all so much for watching it.
I don't know how we did it.
Yeah, we did really, and it was exactly an hour. When I edited it, it was like 1 hour and 1 minute. It's like, wow, yes. We are on fire. So we're still going to do our best to keep to an hour show, but we should be able to delve at least a little deeper into our characters and our stories. We're going to avoid plot summaries and try to just kind of dig more into discussion for this series. Again, Dante is going to be our facilitator since he's the one putting all of this together, which is to my delight.
You know, it's only my favorite comic book series of all time.
Only.
Please don't tell Green Lantern.
but I do want to give a shout out to Lost on... I think it's the Elusive Man is his Twitter handle, and he tweeted his dismay that Dante has never seen.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer featuring Christy Swanson.
Movie, yes, yes.
Yep.
And so after hearing us talk about it in the last episode, because we were comparing Runaways to Buffy, so I'm half tempted for us to do a late to the party episode and actually do a recording of Dante's face watching the Buffy movie.
I have never seen any Buffy of any kind before.
You haven't?
Are you
seen
serious?
Buffy?
Yeah. I missed out on it when it was popular, and I haven't gotten around to catching myself up on it.
Oh, God. Evan, you're hurting my
heart. I know. It's on the list.
Even I've watched Buffy.
It's on the list.
I know.
It's on the list.
Everybody's got a list, and they're ever-growing.
It's a long list.
Yeah, and Buffy's 7 seasons, so it's not a small commitment. But
if I could knock it out in a weekend, I'd be done by now. But
that's mandatory.
It is most certainly required reading.
You have to get there.
On my list, I'm currently running through Stargate SG-1, and I'm a season and a half in, and I'm just like, oh god, like, what am I doing?
And that's how long. There's 10 seasons.
As far as I got.
And don't get me wrong, it's good, but holy moly, it's long. And if I get to Atlantis, that's in another 7 seasons right there.
Yes, Atlantis is great. Anyway.
Anyways, Runaways is beautiful.
Get to Runaways. Yes.
So we've got episodes 5 and 6. For our viewing public, episode 5, they are continuing with the trend of very short, concise episode titles, which I'm so happy about. Episode 5 is called Kingdom, and episode 6 is called Metamorphosis. In Kingdom, we learn a little bit more about the Pride, specifically the Wilders, and where they came from. And we get introduced to a new character named Jonah, who is revealed to be a mysterious benefactor of the Pride. For what reason, we don't know yet. And some very interesting relationship developments happen, both familial and romantic, throughout the course of that episode. And that barrels us into episode 6, Metamorphosis, where I'm just going to go ahead, we'll spoil the entire thing right here, that the team finally gets together. They finally get the band together. it is the scene that everybody wants, or you've got Nico with the staff, and Chase has got his little fistigons, and Molly, you know, lifts up an entire car over her head. The only one that's missing is the dinosaur, but hey, that's all right. I mean, I'll go ahead, I'll take the group shot any day. You know, like, I still got, like, heart palpitations. Like, the first time that I saw that circular shot of the Avengers in the first movie, I was just, oh, God, this is actually happening. And the other big thing in Metamorphosis is that they are starting to make grand steps in working towards unveiling what the Pride has been doing to the general public. And also, relationships kind of go nuts. There are some relationships that are completely deteriorating. There are others that are look like they're on the mend, and there's a whole bunch of conflicted feelings, and at the end of it, we have an extraordinarily weird reveal about the mysterious benefactor Jonah, and it's, for all intents and purposes, for me at least, kind of game changer. That's an extraordinarily high-level overview of what happened in episodes 5 and 6. So I guess we'll start in the same order that we went last week. Rashida, what were your overall overall impressions of these two episodes?
They're good. I'm loving the series. I love the characters. I know we talked a lot about pacing being an issue last week, and it wasn't something that I was experiencing, and I definitely didn't really see it in these two episodes. I felt like things moved pretty quickly in these two episodes, especially in the episode where we see the group come together and then fight their first fight, with each of them displaying kind of their own gifts and abilities to help each other out. I'm still enjoying it. I was able to watch episode 6, Metamorphosis, twice. And interesting, I just realized that was a callback to the guys reading Metamorphosis in the security guard was reading Metamorphosis when Gert is subverting him. Yeah. She's getting his attention. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's reading Kafka because she walks up and says, "Oh, about cockroaches, right? That's totally a metaphor for humanity." Mm-hmm. I didn't catch it the first time. I caught it on the second watch, but I didn't remember that was the title of the episode. So there was a nice nod to that. Very there's other things that are going on that are a Metamorphosis as well, but it's a nice way of kind of tying that into the themes for the characters, the changing Jonah kind of coming out and all that kind of stuff. So
good stuff. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Isabella, what would you say? Overall impressions? Like it, love it, kind of meh? What are you thinking?
I like it, but I was disappointed. I'm still disappointed that they're trying to mending relationships with their parents kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if it's going to finally get them to run away.
Yeah, I keep waiting for, obviously I keep waiting for that to happen too, but I'm wondering if, because it is a show and they need to develop, the characters more, or maybe they felt like needed to develop the parents more. I think my prediction, and I'm jumping ahead in our predictions, my prediction would be that the running away is going to be just that much more devastating because they have had a couple of the kids kind of mend and connect with their parents. Like, and I'm so bad with the names.
You mean like Chase and Victor?
Yes. Chase and Victor is going to be particularly devastating, especially after Victor was healed from his brain cancer. And Amy and Tina is going to be really hard too because of the adultery that was revealed as well. So I think that that's the reason the storytelling is going that way. But
right. Yeah. It just seems to be slowing it down too. Such a degree. I don't know. Maybe I'm just comparing the comics and the show again when I really shouldn't be. But
I mean, I think that's okay. I don't think it's a bad thing to compare the show to the comics. I think that's a natural thing to do. if you know that, but
yeah, everyone's gonna compare to the source material. It's it's a natural phenomenon.
Right, right. I guess I'm just a little miffed that there are so many loose ends right now.
Yeah.
Okie doke.
And they just keep throwing more at
us. Especially considering it hasn't really kicked off yet. Like the actual event of them running away and like.
Right, right. Wrong.
Like, all like these we're adding ends, complications we haven't really started to that resolution.
Yeah. No, I completely understand. So, Evan, now that you've chimed in, let's go ahead and we'll ask you. Overall impressions?
I was thinking a lot of the same lines as Isabella was. Like, for me, it's hard for me to kind of... It's really hard for me to separate my love of the comics from my enjoyment of the show. Because to me, it does still feel like it's going really, really slowly. But also, I'm wondering if that's just because I'm waiting for the things I know are going to happen if they stick to the comics continuity. And I'm like, when are we going to do this thing? When are we going to do that thing? And I'm like waiting for that. And I'm getting eager about it. It makes me wonder if I'm thinking it's moving slower because it's not getting where I want it to be rather than because it's just inherently moving at that pace. But I do definitely think I have some concerns too about how much they're humanizing the parents. And I feel like these past couple episodes have been almost more about the parents than the kids. And like I'm hoping what they're doing is they're building it up so that we can see it destroyed. So that the more they establish the relationships between the parents and the kids and parents and each other, the more will be affected when it all falls apart. But also, I feel like they're making the parents so relatable and so likable in some cases that it's going to be really hard to make them seem like genuine villains. And that's the entire concept this storyline is built on, is kids finding out their parents are villains. And right now, only half the parents really even seem like villains. And the other half kind of feel like they've just gotten pulled along for the ride. And now we're even seeing characters like Victor, who before this past couple episodes was like one of our like clear cut, like this guy's going to go berserk. He's going to kill everybody. He's this like ticking time bomb, and he still might be, but now we're seeing a good side of him that I don't think I wanted to see. Like, I kind of want to see the parents kind of earn the villainousness that I feel like they need to have for the show to even work.
No, I completely understand where you're coming from. I mean, I'm kind of in the camp of where Gert's character is, and Alex's character seem to be, where they are continually hammering home the fact that for 15-ish years they have been sacrificing innocent children. So no matter what kind of short-term healing or short-term mending of relationships there is, it doesn't make up for the fact that they have killed a minimum of 15 kids who otherwise would have gone on to, I mean, who knows, to do whatever in society. That being said, like, again, I'm going to sound like a complete homer, but I absolutely adore it. And I think it's coming from me being able to divorce the comics and the property that I'm seeing here. Like, I understand where it came from, and I also have those same feelings of, you know, like, when are they going to go ahead and meet this character, and when are these folks going to show up, and when's this going to happen, and for heaven's sake, when are they going to go ahead and run away? which I have my own thoughts on that, but I'm still really enjoying the pacing. I'm the one person who's sitting there just saying to myself, you know, like, maybe in the comics it went too fast, as opposed to maybe in the show it's going too lethargically. Because again, like I hammer this home in the last episode that we recorded, but you know, like in the first six issues, they go from happy kids to complete runaways in the span of like two nights. Whereas this is happening over the course of, it seems like, at the very least, a couple of weeks, if not longer than that. Which, considering how much we have to juggle, seems a little bit more reasonable to me than the comics timeline. But yeah, and at this point, the show has just completely shattered my expectations as far as what's going to happen when, because as of right now, I'm basically getting a reboot of Runaways, because nothing has happened the way that it's supposed to happen. And honestly, like I am, like ever since Guardians of the Galaxy came out and became a surprise success, I am beyond questioning what Marvel does.
You'll get the pass.
Yeah, pretty much. Just like, mm-hmm. You made me fall in love with a talking tree and a raccoon, all right, with a machine gun. So I'm beyond questioning your ability to make me entertained.
I've been wondering.
I trust what they're doing.
I've been wondering if they're not going to run away.
That's a distinct possibility.
I really do think that because they established the kids as runaways as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, because I don't know the comics. I don't know if they were established as runaways in the comics, but I was like, I wonder if they're like changing that. Like they've decided to completely, and you know, like I said, I don't know how the comics evolve, so I don't know how realistic this is, but
yeah, I mean,
you know, it is interesting to be halfway. Are there 12 episodes? I can't remember now.
Look it up. I think it's going to be 10.
10.
Yeah, 10.
Yeah, if it's 10 episodes, then we're more than halfway through this year, the first season now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We're more than halfway through the first season, and yeah, I mean, and I completely understand where you're coming from, but this is. To answer your question with the regards to the comics, they don't really touch on the sacrifices. They're meant to go ahead and be like disaffected people that nobody would care about and no one's gonna miss,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. But they never really establish that these people were runaways or these people were really anything. Like the comic was about the kids running away more than the organization or anything like that. But at this point, like I don't even know what's happening. I've read the thing three times and I have no idea what's going to happen. I have no idea where the plot line is going to go. But I'm still excited. This kind of knocks out our second discussion question because we've all been talking about the pacing.
Sorry, I brought it up first just because.
Oh, hey, no problem. Don't worry about it.
On my mind.
I'm perfectly okay with it.
Yeah.
So as far as I read these two episodes, like our first two were world building episodes where we got the sense of who these characters are, what the world is that they inhabit, and for all intents and purposes, like this is probably one of the first times that we have seen Marvel's Los Angeles since the Iron Man movies. This is what Marvel's Los Angeles looks like, and it's great. But now they've shifted a little bit in these last two episodes to focus on relationships, and now we've got our first blatant relationship drama / love triangle stuff that happens in our main cast. We already had the established affair between Janet Stein, Robert Minoru, and Victor Stein, but now we've got the whole Nico Alex thing. We've got the weird Gert Carolina and Chase triangle. We've got the Carolina Alex and Nico triangle, because that's a thing. How do we feel about this? Like, do we feel like this is shoehorned? Is it just another thing that they're throwing in there to make an already complex and, you know, plotline rich show more complicated? Do we like how it's being executed? I guess, like, what are our thoughts here?
That's my favorite part of this past two episodes.
Nice.
That specific thing, because I feel like that kind of touched on the core of what made the comics so good. Mm-hmm. It's not really about the parents. It's not really about even the things they do as a group. It's about the interrelational drama they have with each other. Mm-hmm. And about how they're all teenagers. They're all still finding themselves. They're all still learning about themselves and about the world. Mm-hmm. And how they want to be, how they want to interact with the world, what they want from the world, what they want from each other. And this kind of thing, like, in many cases, like, the kind of high school drama thing is kind of an irritating shoehorned thing, but, like, for Runaways, it's the whole point. Mm-hmm. And, like, especially for those characters, that's, like, it hits them more than most. And, like, especially for Carolina, I really like the way they're kind of handling her kind of journey of self-discovery and, like, her denial phase of trying to figure out what she's looking for in relationships and how that kind of parallels with her learning about what she is as, like, what is she, like, in terms of her abilities and her what she can do and where she comes from. And
well, she's like,
I feel like they're,
she can move energy out of her hands and she can, like, float and hover. Like, it's just like, I don't know, like, it's really cool. I'm not saying I'm critiquing it, but there's so much, like, variability in what she can do.
No,
it's because she's still figuring it out. Like, she doesn't have any idea, like, how it works, what she is, why she has these powers, what
so many theories.
And I mean, it's meant to be a metaphor as well. It's meant to be a metaphor. Yeah. In the comics especially, like, you know, she still has the sparkly, glowy skin. And at least as far as my reading of it, it was always meant to be a metaphor for coming out and discover, you know, and you're coming out as, you know, as homosexual, or basically, like, as a non-heterosexual orientation. Because she had to constantly suppress who she was in order to avoid being noticed in society. I mean, not to mention the fact that she has rainbow skin.
It's not a coincidence.
You know, it's not exactly a coincidence, and it's something that Carolina always struggled with in the books, figuring out, I'm hiding who I am, and there's not really anybody around like me. And I love that they are bringing that from the books into this show. As you know, especially, you know, like I was saying with the Chase Nico thing, sorry. The Carolina.
Let's not
Nico
create thing. Another triangle.
with the Carolina Nico thing. I love that they are introducing that, and they're carrying these metaphors over, because it was one of the most powerful metaphors that they had going on, and specifically those two, that particular dynamic between those two became extraordinarily important, especially towards the latter end of the series. So I'm really excited where that appears to be heading, but again, like, I have no idea where this is heading, because we have really no idea if this is going to take the same track as it did from in the source material.
I really hope it does, because, like, that was one of the things I liked the most about Nico too, because her, like, she's got kind of a similar thing going on with Carolina, but not really, because, like, with Carolina, she's kind of in denial of what she is. She kind of knows, but she hasn't admitted it to herself. Mm-hmm. Nico genuinely has no idea who she is, in the comics at least. And you kind of feel like you get that in the show too. Like, she feels like an outsider because she genuinely has no concept of who she wants to be at all. She's constantly indecisive. She thinks she wants this thing, realizes she doesn't want it, she flits to this other thing, realizes she doesn't want it, and she never really figures it out. That's one of the things I liked about her so much, is she's on a search for, like, her own identity, who she is, what she wants to be, and she it doesn't ever just click for her. She always kind of questions it, and it kind of shows when she's thrown into positions where she needs to kind of act as a leader of the group, and she doesn't really want to, but she needs to. Mm-hmm. And then she questions whether she wants to, and she's always She's a very fluid character.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's kind of coming to light now, like especially with just her relationship with her mother and how that's coming out and how mm-hmm. she's kind of, you know, she's starting this whole flip-flopping thing that she was known for in the books, where she doesn't quite know. Like, you know, she went from episode 4 pretty much hating her mother to end of episode 6 being like, oh, like, is my mom that bad of a person?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really rich and I love it. I think we got a little bit sidetracked, but yeah, like, Regina, what do you think about all of this this relationship drama, love triangle developments that we've been seeing?
I think, like you said, it's pretty central to the genre of like high school dramas.
Yeah.
You know, you can't really have that kind of a story and not have those kinds of relationships develop. Mm-hmm. So, and I like the way it's going because it's not heteronormative. So, it is kind of breaking out of that. And I think that that's been, I wasn't expecting that with the way that it had been working and the way the relationship between Chase and Carolina had been going. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, this kind of looks like it's going here. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh
yeah, it went there.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's,
I was so excited.
I bet. I actually thought about you.
I was like, am I just having like my shipper brain, like my shipper goggles on? And I'm like,
right. Yeah. Am I just shipping this? And this isn't what's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I
was actually happening. And I was like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. It was really awesome. It was really awesome. So I was really pleased with how that evolved, because it seemed very natural to the story and to the dynamics with the teenagers. I also think that we should acknowledge that a lot of times relationships will solidify or intensify in times of crisis.
Uh-huh.
So it makes perfect sense to me that these kinds of relationships and these dynamics are coming up in the midst of all of the mess of the rest of the plot.
Yeah.
Because that's how it works. Like, you're in the uh-huh. mess of life and you're like, oh, this thing is happening is in addition to it. Okay.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to me. It was interesting to watch the evolution of the parents as well, with Tina trying to reconnect to her husband mm-hmm. and being rebuffed, and then having Victor, of course, do the surveillance and find out about the affair, which was, you know, not really a big surprise that he could, you know...
Well, I mean, yeah, he was billed as, you know, the world's foremost scientific and technology mind. So,
right. Of course. Like, well, of course he's going to be able to just tap your phone.
Yeah, but seriously, Robert, you own the company that makes your phone.
I know, right? I thought that too. The way he called him out, I thought that whole scene, I thought, was just hilarious. The way he just slayed them up on the stage. And
of course,
I already have a soft spot in my heart for Victor because this James Marsters playing him. But...
Yeah. I mean, that's a legit thing.
Yeah, it is. Of course it is, because it's just, I see his face and I just want to, like, oh god. Anyway,
it's like, oh, Spike.
Yes, I just can't help it. He doesn't have the Spike look anymore. He doesn't have the gaunt.
He doesn't have the sunken cheekbones.
Yeah, not the same. Not quite the same. Anyway.
No, but yeah, they've. Like, kudos to the makeup department for making him look like a haggard adult. Like,
yes.
Most
yes.
certainly haggard.
Yes, exactly. Well, and then he magically doesn't after he gets shot up with the miracle glowing white, you know, substance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm thinking all of the things that are glowing have to connect to each other, right?
Oh, of course.
Of course. There has to be a glow, mm-hmm. the glow connect. Instead of the rainbow connection, it's the glowing connection.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, you're like, oh, I know too much.
No, rainbow connection, son. I'll talk with you about it off air. But.
Anyway, I think it does make sense. I think it follows for the type of show mm-hmm. this should be, the type of stories that should be told. And that, it, you know, within the drama, I think it makes sense that it's unfolding that way, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Isabella, did you have anything else to add? I mean, like, do you like this whole relationship drama thing? Are you happy with the way that it's going?
Yes. Although I don't like how they've I'm still annoyed by how they made Gert into like this catty, like being like, oh, you don't want me to have him, so that's why I'm doing this, yada yada, you know? But although that is a very teenager way to act, I am annoyed that like the nerdy girl, like cool girl, for getting the attention of the guy when it's really not, like, because Carolina hasn't really shown any interest in Chase for reasons that are now very clear.
Absolutely. I mean, it went the same way in the comics too, where Carolina had really showed like no interest, and he was the one who was just like actively pursuing her, and then and then stuff happened.
stuff happens.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's comics for you, and it looks like that's the way that it's kind of heading here as well, where he's going to run headfirst into reality, and
and so is she.
You know? But yeah, I mean, Isabel, to your point, like, nothing about Gert has really annoyed me so far. I mean, like, I'll be frank, like this is a very unpopular opinion, but Gert was my least favorite person in the comics, and continues to be my least favorite person in the show. I mean, let's be real, like everyone has to have a least favorite character. Mostly just because I don't particularly like people who are contrary for the sake of being contrary, or for the sake of showing that they are smarter than everybody else.
But again, teenager,
that doesn't mean I have to like it.
Yeah.
And that's just a quality that I feel that Gert has, where she is always just, she always has to one up somebody. She always has to have the last word. And you know, she always it always to me feels like she needs to be contrary for the sake of being contrary. And it just, you know,
right. And that's kind of shown through the way she treats Molly too, because we've seen her like just completely shut Molly down like this entire time.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. She treats her own adopted sister like, you know, like a like a teacher would, like a dismissive teacher would shut down a student, as opposed to treating her like a mentoring big sister might, which, I mean, like, again, I hate to go ahead and bring it up, but like that's true about their relationship, at least early on in the comics. You know, as the story progressed, Gert kind of unwillingly took on the big sister role, but I mean, like, to be fair, like Gert is acting extraordinarily in character for being translated from book to screen.
I found the most endearing scene with her was her trying to flirt with the security guard.
Yeah, that's when I most liked her.
Yeah, that's the one time I was like, oh, this is okay. Like, I could see her character developing a little bit more and the way they were like buffing her up with, you know, the compliments and, oh, you know, where's your boyfriend and that kind of thing. I thought was really kind of well done in terms of taking somebody who didn't have that kind of swagger, and she kind of naturally developed it because she just went in with always reading, you know, the Metamorphosis. So here I have something to talk about.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, flirted in the most awkward way, but still managed to do it because, you know, Nico says to her, just be yourself. And she did, and that's how she did it. She was just herself, and I thought that was really endearing. But that has definitely been the one time I think I had that kind of like that swell of, oh, cool, let's see who she becomes through the whole thing. Because I feel like, and maybe it is kind of indicative to high school and to the, you know, to the identity formation and figuring out who you are that you go through at that age. But like, she's already trying so hard to perform an identity, Like all she wants to do, kind of like you were saying, Dante, that like have to one up, that push to, you know, to be contrary. Like she's working so hard at that. I always find it so off-putting. And and I find that from her character in this too. So this is the first time I felt like she stepped back into like who maybe she really was on the inside.
Yeah.
More than her, let me project, I'm a feminist and I'm going to start this feminist. Not that there's anything wrong with projecting a feminist persona. Please don't anybody get mad at me.
Sure.
You know, that kind of idea where she's like, I'm going to glom onto this one idea. This is who I'm going to be, and this is how I'm going to make it happen. So,
yeah. I mean, it's really interesting that you bring up that particular point, because of all six characters, all six of the main characters, I feel like she's literally the only one who actually knows who she is. Alex at this point, I mean, he's clearly struggling between the, you know, being a boy and being a man, because as far as being a man is concerned, all he sees is his father. And all he knows at this point is like, he does not want to be his father. We've got Chase, who's struggling between, the image that he has of being a jock and having this extraordinarily gifted mind for science. We have Carolina, who is clearly struggling with both her identity as a member of the church and her sexuality and her, you know, and her status as a human glow stick. And then we've got Nico, who's going through her teen rebel phase. She's not quite sure, like, she doesn't seem like she's quite sure what she is. She's just kind of reacting and in a constant state of grief over her lost sister. Molly, I mean, I feel like she's too young to really know who she is, besides like being the younger sibling of everybody. Like, Gert seems to me like she's the only one who knows, like these are my values, this is what I like. And like, she's going about it in a very confrontational and contrary and frankly abrasive way, but I feel like she's the only one who actually really does know who she is, even if she is unclear at this point on what is the best way to express all of these things.
I don't think I entirely agree with that. I don't think that she 100% knows who she is. I think in the comics, one of the things that I did like about her that I think is translating into this show as well is she was very opinionated and very confident, but also very single focused on very specific aspects of who she is. I think she knows certain things about herself with concrete clarity. Like, she knows and she's a feminist and that she cares about social justice, but she doesn't know who she is outside of that yet. She has serious tunnel vision. She is defining herself based on this one characteristic that she knows she has and hasn't figured out what else there is to her. She's kind of in denial of it. And one of the things I liked about her in the comics is she was very much the same way. She was very independent, and then she finds herself in a position where she needs somebody, where she can't be self-sufficient anymore, and that's hard for her. That kind of breaks her down. She has to kind of realize that it's okay to be vulnerable sometimes and to not have all the answers, and I think I can sort of see that happening here too. Like, she feels like kind of a cardboard cutout of a feminist stereotype in a lot of ways, but that's because she sees herself as that and she's not willing to face other aspects of who she is yet.
I really like your point. I really do. I mean, again, like, I do still maintain that this that vision of Gert is still it's very informed by the source material, and I think we've all seen at this point, like, we can't trust the source material anymore.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, like what you just expounded on may still come to be in future episodes, in future seasons. It may still come to be that that she reveals to herself that she needs to depend on somebody, and she needs to be a part of a unit as opposed to someone who is concerned with pulling her own weight. And I mean, I should sincerely look forward to exploring that in the show if when they ever get there. That being said, I feel like we've kind of exhausted that particular topic. We do have other stuff that we can be talking to. And we've been harping a lot tonight on the differences between comics and the show. Yeah. Which, you know, like I mean, for those of you who out there in Radio Land who haven't read the comics, we're sorry. we're sorry that we're bringing it up so much. It's very hard for us to go ahead and divorce these things. Mm-hmm. But one of the discussion questions that I had written previous to this episode was another one of the gargantuan departures from the source material is the relationships with the parents. We've touched on this earlier, but I really want to get in deep with it. Is the relationships with the parents in the books? Like we've said before, the kids kind of find out, they run away, and basically the parents are trying to kill them from that point forward. You know, there are some parents who are just like I kind of feel bad about it, but they're still kind of trying to go ahead and kill the kids. But the show has thrown a gargantuan monkey wrench in that, where we've got rapidly deteriorating relationships with Gert and her parents, Alex and Jeffrey, and Carolina and Leslie, and we've got the two healing ones, Chase and Victor, Tina and Nico. And I know, like, we've already kind of touched on it, but, I mean, what are our expounded thoughts on the nature of these relationships and how they're explored in the show? I mean, again, like, you know, a central theme of the show, as well as in the comic, is the theme of family. And it seems to be the connecting thread between these episodes on multiple levels. So, I mean, like, I'm inviting you four, or you three, I'm four. I can't math. I'm an English major. to go ahead and explore it. Like, I mean, so, like, what are we thinking? Like, really, let's dig deep into these new relationships and the ones that are breaking, the ones that are healing.
Yep. I want to hear from Isabel. Like, she's been quiet.
Sorry, I got a flu shot yesterday. I feel horrible. Anyway, can I bring up this really nitpicky thing that
sure.
I have with shows and magical songs and how they give Victor brain cancer to just magically heal it to make him more feel for him and also explain away all this crazy behavior by being like, oh no, he was sick, it's fine, and oh look, he's not sick anymore, so it's also fine, he can be a good person now. One of like my biggest annoyances, especially with like cancer stories, is just like, hey, here's this terminal illness.
Terrible thing, and then we're going to heal it. The mm-hmm. same episode that you reveal yeah. it in. Yeah, that was a little rough.
Yes. I have this bone to pick with Buffy, too. Mm-hmm. For several reasons, but I have legit stopped watching shows because they have done the here, let's give this character a terminal illness just to make them empathetic or to say their flaws or whatever.
Wait, who they did that in Buffy? Is that why you're or
yes? Yes, they gave.
I mean, they didn't take it away in Buffy though, they gave the cancer.
They did, and then they solved it, and then she died of an aneurysm. It wasn't related. It's done, and then it came back in a totally different way. So, yes, and it also had like supernatural repercussions, which also no.
Okay.
I have troubles with cancer as a storyline.
Yeah.
For many no, reasons. I get it. Like, I mean, yeah, cancer's a rough thing to. Cancer's a rough thing to deal with.
Yeah,
I
and that's not even it, but like See, like dealing with, I don't even know if I'm putting this right because I'm, but it's lazy storytelling.
Yeah,
I feel like.
Yeah, it's a shortcut, and like I said, you know, they just revealed, and he just revealed publicly that he had brain cancer, and then
5 seconds later, he has magic blood that makes
before
him
the end of the
now.
Episode, he's healed.
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and assume that we haven't seen the full conclusion of that. I think.
Well, it seemed like his memory was compromised too.
I think they'll. I don't think they're going to throw that out the window. I think we haven't seen the last of it.
Well, we didn't see the cops come back.
Yeah, it's.
They did go into the police station, and it was not resolved in any way. So that there was that. So we have seen at least some evidence of remaining loose ends, but not that it will. I mean,
right. So
I do have a feeling like this probably belongs in like the prediction section of this episode. But I do have a feeling that we're going to find out that the cure for his cancer is somehow related to whatever mutant abilities Molly has. They kind of
I think it's
going
to be. I think it's related to Carolina.
I mean.
I don't think so, but that's because I think I know what Carolina is.
Yeah.
Hey, no, that's perfectly fine. Let's touch on that when we make our predictions at the end of this recording.
So let's stick to the parents now, right?
Not just parents, but just any of these deteriorating relationships.
Yeah.
And or the healing ones. So Evan, Regina, what are your takes on these relationships?
I think I expanded pretty thoroughly on it earlier. I think I have concerns that they're humanizing the parents a bit too much across the board. Like in the comics, I think they handled it decently well, where you did have a few that were pretty sympathetic, and you had a few that were kind of like neutral aggressive, and you had a few that were like psycho. And I don't really feel like we have that same kind of variety in the show. I feel like all of them are at least a little bit like relatable. I wish some of them, they would just let be straight evil. Like, I feel like that would be so much better in terms of the drama they could deal with it. Cause like right now it feels like it's all kind of various gray shades.
Yep.
And like some of them are obviously worse than others, but none of them really feel like genuine villains. None of them feel like murderers. Like half of them feel like they're just kind of not thinking about what they're doing. They're just kind of sticking their fingers in their ears and pretending they're not murdering people.
Well, and there was something too mentioned early about like this was the last time they had to do it, right? Something mentioned about that, right? That this was the last time.
They had implied that this was going to be the last sacrifice, that they had been doing this for a while. And to Evan's point, the parents run the gamut. They the complete gamut of people like the Yorkses and to a certain extent the Wilders, who are kind of reluctantly going along with it, to people in the middle like the Steins, and then people like Tina Minoru, who's kind of like her on her own spectrum by herself, along with Leslie Deed, who they're just sitting there just like, yeah, like he's cool. Like this is great. Everything's fine. You know, house is burning around. They're just like, everything's, don't worry about it. Like Leslie Dean even had that moment where she was like, he lives on. He lives on inside of another person.
Right.
So like it doesn't even faze her.
Yeah. The pathological.
Right.
Yeah.
I'd arguably put maybe Catherine in that group because I don't know if she's shown a whole ton of remorse for anything she's done so far.
Like she
and maybe
really
we
hasn't.
Haven't We haven't gotten like enough of the backstory, but from the beginning, she just seemed like
Well, I mean, she was the. That's what I was going to bring up. She's the only one. Oh no, it was Tina. Wait, no, it was Catherine. It was Catherine who connects with Molly and finds Molly, and Molly escapes out of the coffee shop in one of the early episodes, and then she's in the car with her, and she gets in the back seat, and she has the shot.
This one that's going to, like, erase her memory.
Right.
Yeah, and they're like, well,
yeah.
And she was like, oh, I can't believe I almost did that.
Right.
But now that she knows that Molly knows, she's like,
I made a mistake.
Damn it, why didn't I do that?
Yeah, that's what she says. I made a mistake. I should have taken care of this when I could. Yeah. And she's the only one that we've seen so far who's been willing to take a direct action against the kids.
Yeah.
Like, she's the only one that's gone that way. So I feel like she's the... Like I can see Tina being not bad, and I can see Victor being bad, and Leslie is just some other kind of level of delusional, like you said. You know, he lives on eternally.
She's a co-leader. She's gone off the deep end.
Yeah, she's her belief has just taken her wherever she needs to be now. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Catherine is the sleeping tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just get the sense that, like, some of the bad stuff that's going to go down in this is going to be at her hands.
Oh, man, it's going to be great. I can't wait. Oh, my God. I cannot wait for her to actually go ahead and, like, stab somebody with that thing that she almost hit Molly with a couple of episodes ago. Like, because once that hits, like, it is going, like it's going to be on, and I cannot wait. I think I want to circle back to what Evan was saying, that he's concerned that they're humanizing the parents too much.
Right.
I feel so much the opposite way. Again, we didn't have that much time with the parents in the comics where it was just like, they're villains, here we go. And like, it's a thing. And the parents were kind of secondary characters. But I feel like this just makes for a much more entertaining and realistic story. We're talking about kids whose parents are supervillains and who have superpowers themselves. Realistic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it makes for a much more compelling story, and it provides our heroes with an opportunity to really grow as characters, and within the storyline to grow up very quickly. Because what kind of growth is there if they go down to Murder Basement, they see all their parents sacrificing these kids, and then just like, oh, okay, cool, well, they're villains now, great, let's go ahead and we'll beat them up, we'll run away, and everything, you know, and everything will be fine. It's like, it's one thing to go ahead and have that kind of a character, like, as a solitary person. For instance, Heath Ledger's Joker in The Dark Knight, where he just wants to go in there, create chaos. Like, he doesn't care about literally anything except for creating as much chaos and mayhem and murder and death as possible. If you have 12 of those characters, I feel like you have diminishing returns. And that is what I feel... That's what I feel would necessarily need to happen if we had a whole bunch of people like Leslie Dean who are there, they are dedicated, they are motivated, and they're completely 110% brainwashed into this cult by giving them their distinct personalities, their own personal reservations, and their own levels of involvement within, you know, Red Robe Murder Cult, then it creates unique relationships between the kids, and ultimately at that part where the kids do decide to run away or to sever ties, it's going to make those decisions and that storytelling moment that much more devastating. Like, I know one of you said it earlier in the episode. I think it was you, Regina. It's going to make everything that much more devastating.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think it makes for much more entertaining storytelling. Because well, because for me, like, I'm really conflicted. And,
yeah.
Like, I'm really conflicted over, like, do I want the kids to run away now? Like, do I want them to go ahead and, like, do I want Chase and Victor to go ahead and try to mend the relationship? Like, part of me is just like, kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's what's interesting is, you know, and we talked about this when we present the Baskets and Capes panel. I talk about how, you know, we've gone through this whole thing about our villains aren't heroes. Yeah, exactly. They aren't clear cut, but our heroes aren't anymore either. And, you know, my big example of that is like trying to take Superman and dirty him up. Like that wasn't what Superman was ever supposed to be, but that's what we look for now is we look for these kind of, we look for the good and bad, kind of the marble, you know, of the black and white kind of together. And I think that that is, I really do. And I do believe that they're building up these relationships so that the devastation when they do run away will be greater and we'll feel it more. Because that's another part of adolescence is that breaking away from your parents, but wanting to stay a kid at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's where I see Nico when she wants to, you know, is in the office and she sees her mom crying and she immediately wants to go to her to console her. And, you know, Alex is like, yeah, no, of course you can't do that in this moment because of where we are and what the significance of this is. But that moment of like still wanting to like have that level of connection you have when you're younger with your parents and that, you know, realizing that, I mean, you know, of course it's a metaphor, you know, we're not finding out that our parents are, you know, in a cult that, you know, at least hopefully. Sorry. Any listeners who did find out that their parents were, you know, sacrificing people to a gibbon, I don't know.
to give in murder cult, yeah.
Right. but we do find out when we're adolescents that our parents aren't, you know, a paragon of virtue and are real people and make mistakes. I mean, you're finding it out for, you know, your whole life in a small degree, but when you start to individualize and when you start to pull away and to make your identity your own, then you start to see your parents' own as individuals as well. And so that process is going to be more painful for the kids who are having those reconciled relationships. And I think as viewers, that's going to make it a lot easier than just an instantaneous, our parents are evil, we got to get out of here, let's go on the run story.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's like, and everything that you just said is the wonderfully articulated version of the conflict that's going on inside of my brain, of why I will still stand by and defend this show despite the fact that the pacing is abysmal for some people.
Right. Because it's expectation. I mean, that's part of it is like, I don't feel an issue with the pacing because I'm not looking at what happened in the comics and I'm not looking at something. Yeah. I don't have the source material to go from and say, why isn't this happening this way? It happened this way in the book. And not to say exactly. I don't do that. Because I do that. I have been guilty of that on many occasion. And I will stick to my guns on some of the times that I've been like that. But it is really nice to be the one in this, you know, in the show as we're having these discussions. I'm like, I don't know, I think it's great. Like,
oh yeah,
I don't know what's coming. I got no ideas. I got all my theories and it's fun, you know?
Yeah. I think it's wonderful that they are taking the time to really explore and flesh out the worlds. So that way, like when repercussions happen and they will I'm going to moments.
It's going to be huge. It's going to be such a blow. And it's going to be so devastating. And I love that. I mean, that's good storytelling, but I really appreciated, this is the second series, you know, I really appreciated Hulu's, The Handmaid's Tale for the same reason, because again, adapted from a book, which I still haven't read, even though Isabella gave it to me. Well, you gave it to me at the beginning of the semester. No.
several months ago.
One of the things they did in that was that they developed characters that weren't developed in the book to much greater degree. And made the story, I think, just that much more interesting because you did get a deeper sense of who those characters were as opposed to their them being more placeholders of, you know, husband and best friend and things like that. You got to see their actual journeys, and that was very satisfying. And I think Hulu's doing a really good job of getting writers in to produce these shows from the source material and understanding a good way to tell the stories.
Oh, absolutely. The fact that Brian K. Vaughan is on the credits as an executive consultant, it just makes my heart sing every single time.
The author of The Handmaid's Tale, whose name is escaping me.
It's very nice. Margaret Atwood.
There, thank you.
All right, so so we've got just one more big discussion question, then the rapid fires to close. So I guess we'll start here. Have you changed your mind about any character on the show in the last couple of weeks? And if so, why? And alternatively, if not, then why not? And also, thank you, Regina, for this one. What are your thoughts on Jonah and what he's up to? Isn't it a little bit late to be adding a new character?
Well, I mean, we saw him.
Yes. He's been omnipresent for this entire episode, or for the entire series. Yeah. Have any of you changed your minds about any of these characters?
I think Carolina is more. She's becoming more and more interesting to me.
I agree.
As we go, just like her.
I'd have to toss her up as her and Nico up as my favorite characters now.
Yes.
I can't. I was very clearly Nico for me last time, but I feel like Carolina is you know, very much right up there in terms of, and I can even have a little bit. I think Molly's the one I have the least sort of connection to, and I think it's because they're still trying to make her act like she's significantly younger, but she doesn't look significantly younger. So I keep wanting to shake her by the shoulders and be like, "Why are you behaving like?" You know, like this when I know in the back of my head, I'm like, okay, she's still written young, even if she doesn't look young. Because some of the things that she's doing, I'm like, oh, come on.
Oh, yeah, especially with the basically confessing that, you know, we saw your murder cult at the end of episode 6. Spoiler alert.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, like that whole thing, I'm just sitting there like, Molly, why? Why are you doing this? Why?
I mean,
there you go for people who are upset about the pacing. Molly just kind of shifted everything to overdrive now because things are going to have to happen.
I wrote that down as one of my predictions was that the runaway is going to happen because of what Molly just did. Like, I'm not going to say it's going to happen the next episode because I don't think it's necessarily going to move that quickly given the way the pacing is going. But probably before the next time we re-record, they will have run away and it's going to be in direct relation to what Molly just did.
Sure.
But I think they're always going to, everything that happens, I think that's what's going to cause it.
Yeah. I don't know. This time I feel
I mean, just know that their parents murdered another kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wait, no more predictions yet. We got to go ahead and get to that at the end.
Okay. Sorry, I keep jumping.
No, it's cool. It's cool.
I'm bad habits.
So, no, that's fine. What was I going to say?
Thoughts on Jonah? He's creepy.
He is super creepy.
So,
oh my gosh.
Creepy.
Creep. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm gonna jump right in there. It's just like he's my new character that I love to hate.
Yeah,
he's jumped in and he's just like just like James Marsters, and Tina, they have stolen every single scene that they have been in, and Jonah is now just that way. Every time he is on camera, I don't know who this guy is, but he has some sort of camera presence, and it is spectacular. And just the way that he is tackling this character and all of his self grandeur, his self aggrandizement,
charisma,
his charisma, his cocky confidence.
He does have crazy eyes.
Yeah, his crazy eyes.
Overlook it because the package is so shiny.
You know, like his jackal smile, is absolutely fascinating. Like, I am simultaneously drawn to him and want to vomit every time he's on screen. I am that conflicted about it.
He's the kind of bad guy I wanted to see more of in this kind of situation. Like, I loved the part where they're at the dance And he like walks up to Leslie and Frank dancing, and he's like, "Do you mind if I steal your wife?" And
yeah.
Like, he means it literally, and he says it right to his face.
Yeah.
And he knows exactly what he means, but he doesn't even care. Like, he's that kind of bad guy. I wanted
to Yeah. And then it's that long-ish pause where you're sitting there, like, is he going to go ahead and say something? And then it's like just long. It's like, oh yeah, right, just for this one dance.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Oh god. Like it's so good.
Yeah. He's great.
Oh yeah. But, So I think I've changed my mind about a surprising character. I've changed my mind about Frank Dean.
Really?
He is starting to show a tiny bit of backbone.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, I mean, it's, I don't know precisely why all of his memories are now surfacing of his wife, of walking in on his wife sleeping with Jonah. But like, it's all coming back, and like we all knew that like something's wrong with Frank, and like he's kind of a neutered character, but now that he is getting his memories back, I feel like we are going to see an extremely different Frank Dean. I mean, he, as far as I'm concerned, is going to be the wild card in this entire situation. Which is wonderful to me to see. I didn't really want to see anybody be a lame duck in this particular series, and I thought that that's how they were going to go with Frank. Like, I know, like, you know, they already 86'd the Hernandez family, so that's already two people off the map. And I figure, like, all right, cool. So they're going ahead and they're using Frank to just go ahead and get this weird love triangle dynamic thing in there for, you know, for ratings or whatever. But like, no, it seems like they're actually using him in a much more nuanced way than I had given them credit for. And the actor has shown cognizance, at least to me, of that he clearly is acting in a way that, you know, that lets me know that the actor knows what's coming, and he is trying to go ahead and give us hints as to what is coming with Frank Dean, and I appreciate that in him. It's made me appreciate the actor, and it's made me appreciate the rendition of this character a lot more.
Interesting. I'm worried about him because he went off with Jonah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, like there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that he's probably gonna bite it, and he's probably gonna be one of the first ones. But I think that he's going to end up. I think he's gonna end up being a much more compelling character than he has been in the last several episodes.
I guess I can see that, especially with his. Well, I'm not, you know, gonna try for this again because this isn't really mine. I thought that was interesting.
Absolutely.
Like, again, you know, he's sort of mirroring the adolescent journey of sort of coming into your own, you know, and trying to figure out who you really are. He's sort of mirroring that as well.
Absolutely. All right. So Evan, any character, anybody that you've changed your mind about?
I don't know that I've changed my mind about any characters. It's more thoroughly cemented in my mind how much I wish the parents were more contrasting with one another.
I gotcha.
And were more transparently, like, in the wrong. Like, it's hard to say because there's so much ambiguity about the situation still. We don't really know who's, like, who has more blood on their hands in terms of the parents yet. I think we'll see some more skeletons come out of some more closets pretty soon, and we'll sort of understand that even some of the ones that seem more sympathetic now really did a lot more bad things than they should have. But I would like to be seeing that now while informing my opinion of these characters rather than have it be flipped on its end later. Like, I would rather... I would have preferred to see the bad side of the parents first and then see the humanizing side later rather than kind of how we've got it the other way around. I think the way it is right now, it's going to be harder to build drama later. I feel like if I don't start to see more of that, I'm going to start being disappointed.
Okay. I entirely understand. I mean, again, like I still kind of feel like we've seen the evil side of the Paris where they're condoning murder. I mean, like even if they're not condoning murder, like they're still doing it.
Yeah. They're still participating in the sacrifice.
Yeah, they're still participating in the sacrifice. I mean, like, even if at this point a lot of them are doing it because they're being blackmailed, because you know, Tina Minoru, my main squeeze over there, she's recording everything and getting ready to blackmail everyone. It's like, it's wonderful.
All going to be fried.
Oh God, I can't wait. This is going to be so much fun. So, all right, so cool. So let's go with our rapid fire questions then. Most compelling moment from episode 5, Kingdom. So Regina, we'll start with you.
Definitely when they all came together to fight.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that moment.
Evan, same.
Yeah.
Same. Izzy? I mean, me too.
It was a really good moment.
It was really fun. I mean, you know, it was what we were waiting for. We waited 5 episodes to get it, so.
You know, I was happy.
And we've been kind of teased with that image with, like, the promos in the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the one I put on the header for the website and on the video. So
they've used it in a lot of promotional stuff.
It is the quintessential image, and so it was exciting to see that to come to fruition.
Cool. All right, fantastic. So most compelling moment from episode number 6, Metamorphosis.
Oh God.
Are you gonna say the Stan Lee cameo?
I was going to say the Stan Lee cameo. Or Gert's flirtation, I think, because that helped me connect to her character for the first time. Because pretty much everything else is just so messy. I mean, there's Carolina floating, there's Carolina's scene with Nico as well.
Yeah.
So it would probably be a tie for me between Carolina's scene with Nico and Gert's flirtation, because those were both big character developing moments.
Mm-hmm. All right. Izzy, how about yours?
I'd have to say when Tina goes up to her office and Nico catches her crying, just because that's like the first crack we've seen in Tina's
veneer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, maybe it's not as easy on her, is it? And she makes it out to be.
Absolutely. No.
And the Carolina Nicotine chorus, but besides that one.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I'm completely with you with the, with Tina, like that was the hands down my number one best moment in that episode. Mostly because I think I have a secret crush on her. It might not be a secret crush anymore.
Not a secret crush anymore.
No, but like, yeah, like I have an unabashed love for how like evil and compelling she was, and just to see her have this little slice of humanity by herself in a dark office. It just. No, it solidified to me that she is a whole character, and while she might be that ruthless with regards to the pride activities and with regards to the whole sacrificing bit, like I truly believe that she is as stone cold as you know as she presents during those ceremonies, but it let me know that like, oh wow, like she actually does love her husband. She's not like she is not this stone cold person the entire time. She has warm places in her heart for her husband and presumably for both of her daughters as well. And it's it really struck a chord with me. But again, I mean like realistically, like any scene with Tina Minoru is probably going to be my favorite one. But that one is just like icing on the cake. Absolutely loved it. All right, Evan, how about you?
I think for me, it was Carolina discovering that she could fly.
Oh yeah. I really liked that one. It made me really happy.
It's such an important part of her, like her character too. Cause like we mentioned earlier, like her big deal is her figuring out what she is. And that's like a quintessential kind of a symbolic thing where she realizes what she is. And then also at the same time, like, she realizes what she is kind of awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Like, before it was just kind of, like, weird and like, odd. And now she's like, I can fly. Or at least, like, hover. And it's like, that's just, that right there is kind of one of the things that in the comics when they did it, I felt like it had a bit more punch because, again, like, things were bleaker for them at that point. And then that was kind of like a spark of reality of, hey, not everything's so bad. Like, it's better than it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we got some of that here, too. But also, in the way they did it here, it was kind of, she's kind of hit rock bottom. She's really questioning herself. She's really trying to wrap her head around her emotions and what they mean. Yep.
She's resorted to drinking vodka out the bottle.
Yeah, bad vodka too. They point out bad vodka. Why'd you have to get the cheap vodka?
Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful. But yeah, I love that. I love that scene where she learned how to fly in the books too. Like, especially like because she was like, I can fly. It was a full page spread, and she was happy. She was happy crying in that spread. Like, it was wonderful. Like, I wish that they had done something like that, but just her, that scene where she's just kind of floating there and just realizing, like, as her face is melting from fear to just wonder and joy, is positively fantastic. All right. So next one, I got to go ahead and scroll down on the Google Doc because I scrolled up.
Predictions.
All right, yep. Bold predictions for the next two episodes.
I think we can all say that they run away.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I think that they're going to run away like episode 10. Like, I think episode 10 is...
I think it's going to be 9 or 10.
Yeah, I think it's going to be 10 where they finally are just like, nope, like, we're out.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, but then the Molly thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And once the Molly thing happened and Tina started to get freaked out, I wondered if that was going to move up a little faster. So I'm going to put in that it's going to happen in the next two episodes because of Molly.
My prediction is they're not going to actually run away till the season finale.
That's what
the pace they're going.
Yeah,
I feel like they might get to the conflict stage of things now, where they like have to confront their parents.
Yep.
And they try and stop them from doing whatever they're actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to actually run away until the end of this season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'm putting you both down for end of season runaway.
Mm-hmm.
Put me down there too, because I'm with them.
I'll be the outlier. I'm fine with that.
All right. All right. Yeah. So, Isabella, what's your bold prediction for the next two episodes, 7 and 8?
I still think something horrible is going to happen to Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Especially now that he's getting his memories back.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be able to hide any of that. He's only going to get more suspicious.
Yeah.
And now that Jonah's in the mix, he's definitely going to notice something.
Yeah, I'm suspicious of Jonah walking off with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's not going
to be good. Maybe he's fed up with it and is just going to get rid of Frank completely. Yep. So he can be with Leslie. I don't know. But
I kind of suspect that with Frank, he's going to be, like, my other prediction is Frank is going to be the inciting incident that, like, triggers everything that else that happens.
Okay.
I think he's going to be the one who figures, like, he's going to ask the wrong questions. He's going to be confrontational about it. He's going to drive the rest of the parents out into the open in regards to what they do. He's going to be the person who pushes them over the edge and causes the parents to officially do something bad to cover it up, probably kill him, probably do it traumatically and terribly. And that's what's going to, like, concretely establish them as the villains, and I think that's what's going to cause the kids to run away officially.
Cool. All right. So I think I'm also on the Frank train, where I think by episode 8, Frank Dean will have either started a conflict that will really start to get the ball rolling, and or he is going to die. Because at this point, like, he's like Isabella was saying, like, he's getting his memories back. There's no way that he's going to start to back down from this, and just take it silently. He's going to go full ham on this one. And I think he's going to die. I think by the end of episode 8, we will finally understand what the nefarious purpose of this whole pride is. Because as of right now, all we've really been given is that they're killing teenagers so that Jonah can get from decrepit old man stage to, you know, to suave, charismatic, creepy car salesman guy. I have to believe that it is more
and
than this.
All of it has something to do with that school they're building.
Yeah, exactly. Everything has to do with that real estate development. And I think that we are finally going to figure out by the end of episode 8 what the connection is with the Gibbs, what the connection is with this big overarching plot. And we are finally going to see, or rather uncover, what this mystery is. Like, whether or not the kids figure it out is secondary. Like, I think by the end of episode 8, the audience will have at least had that revealed to them. And I think my last one is that I think that Catherine is going to get to Molly. I think she's going to get to Molly, and she is going to stick her in the neck with super magic, you know, brain serum. And I think Molly is going to be out of the fight.
That would change things. Super strength.
Oh yeah, I mean that's why I wanted to be a bold prediction, because I might be wrong, but I'm gonna have fun doing it. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
So, overall letter grades for episodes 5 and 6.
I go A.
Cool, Isabella.
A minus.
Sweet.
For my Netflix. Yeah.
All right, Evan.
I think I'm giving him a B plus.
I knew you were gonna say that. We're like going down.
How dare you?
It's the pacing is starting to really irritate me. Like, it's kind of, that's all it really is. Like, I love everything else about it. It's just that is starting to just grate at me. It's like, move.
Yeah, I need some
resolution. I feel
like I'm
driving behind a slow car.
All right. Well, since I was just going to give it an A, but since Evan gave it a B plus, I need to bump up the average. I'm giving it an A plus. Because again,
I wrote down A plus for you before you even said it.
Of course you did. Yeah. I mean, can you tell that I'm just being a homer at this point?
I'm good with that. You're into it. That's all right.
Hey, that's cool. So, all right. So there we go.
All right. All right, so thanks for listening and watching. Answer our rapid-fire questions in the comments on the site, thegeekembassy.com. The most compelling moments from episodes 5 and 6, your bold predictions, and your overall letter grade. Follow us on Twitter at thegeekembassy. Like us on Facebook. Come chat with us. We're really excited about Runaways. We hope you guys are too. And until next time, get your geek on. Bye.
Bye. Bye.